Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Mike Force Podcast. It is, of course, your host, Mike G. I might sound like I'm a little stuffed up. It's because I am. I just got over RSV, a gnarly virus that gave me pneumonia, bronchitis, all kinds of goodies. If it sounds that way, it's because I'm getting over it and I want to keep the podcast grinding. I like to stay up on current events so they're pre-recorded within a week. And I want to make sure that you guys get this information. So excuse me for being a little stuffy-headed today, but let's kick it off with our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P. That's BetterHelp. Look, guys, is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? A lot of experiences that I have with mental health, with issues that people are dealing with, is we don't talk about them enough. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. I think this is gnarly because you could do it right now and start communicating in under 48 hours. Hey, this isn't a crisis line. This is not self-help. It's a professional therapy done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas, and the service is available for clients worldwide. You simply log into your account anytime, you send a message to your therapist, and then you'll get a timely response, a thoughtful response, plus you can schedule your weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit uncomfortably waiting in a room, waiting on a traditional therapist. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is available, which I think is super cool. Because any help nowadays is better than nothing. And BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit their website. Check out the show notes for that. You can see their testimonials. We have betterhelp.com/reviews. Also, visit betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P. And join over a million people who are taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. So right now, if you use BetterHelp for the Mike Force podcast, using this special offer, Mike Force as a coupon code, that's M-I-K-E-F-O-R-C-E, you can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Mike Force. Hey guys, I also want to talk about Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens has saved my ass on the road. I just got off the road teaching in Washington State. I drove 11 hours. Met up with my good buddy, Kevin, and his beautiful wife and family, and trained the next day for 5 hours, and then drove back 11 hours. I typically fast. I fast 16-hour windows. 16-hour windows is normally my routine. Maybe Saturday I might take off, or Sunday, depending on what's going on. But I break my fast with Athletic Greens. What I realized in just being sick on the road is I'm not a fan of gas station chow, so I don't eat really well on the road anyway, but the perfect balance for me for breaking fast and also keeping full of dense and important essential nutrients was my Athletic Greens packs on the go. So you guys right now via this offer can go to athleticgreens.com. That's Athletic Greens. That's A-T-H. I got to spell this out myself. A-T-H-L-E-T-I-C greens.com. /Mike Force, and I got to do this because I got to do this for you guys as well. You guys can get sent a link where you can get a free offer for only Mike Force listeners of a free year supply of liquid vitamin D plus 5 free travel packs with subscription. That's what I use. I use the subscription packs and I travel everywhere with them. In fact, I use 6 of them on this trip because I did 2 a day on the road to help boost my immunity, but also break my fast, and they're going to help you out. One thing that we're deficient in always, even those who like the sun, is that good old vitamin D. Make sure you hit athleticgreens.com/Mike Force and save by getting your free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with subscription. Guys, we are kicking off the podcast with talking about the things that you want to know. All things related to preparedness, all things that got dumped into my direct message account via me saying, hey, ask the questions. I'm going to answer those right now for all of you on this episode. Also talking about some different things that are going on in the world. The world's getting crazy. So here we go. Hey, what's going on, guys? These are my favorite podcast. I already said it in the intro. I did have a cold. That's why I sound all stuffy. That annoys you. I am sorry. I will try my best to sound normal. But if you didn't listen to the intro, you missed out on some good incentives for our advertisers. But people who sponsor this podcast, who are also friends, partners, affiliates, make sure you go back and check that out if you hadn't had the opportunity to. I love these because I get to answer your questions and then answer that for the masses, for multiple people. Let's get right to it. Canine preparedness, question mark. So canine preparedness is important. I think it's the one thing that you have at your disposal if you're willing to put in the work, like right here, right now. I mean, a lot of things you have to get trained up for. You want to be better at driving, got to go through driving curriculum. Likely, you got to travel, you got to do a whole bunch of stuff. You want to start training your dog or working with your dog to improve your level of preparedness, you could do that now. Obedience training isn't that difficult. And then putting packs, like a pack on your dog that can carry survival, first aid, while you go hike, while you go outdoors, while you enjoy with your, you know, the outdoors with your family, that is a very good asset to have. Dogs are a great asset because they're pack-minded. They look at your family. Hopefully, they look at you as part of their pack. So they're going to alert as an early warning device, hey, something's going on. And they're going to be able to hear better than you, smell better than you, and do most things when it comes to alertness better than you. And that's important. You want to have that level of protection. So look at your local area for some good, reliable, repeatable, and consistent, trainers. Look, I've worked with a lot of dog trainers over the span of my adult life. I've worked with very poor dog trainers and organizations, and I've worked with very good ones. I have a service dog, a very intelligent service dog named Pearl, and I had to do a lot of consistent training with her. When I didn't train her, she fell apart because she's a Belgian Malinois. But when I stayed up on her and trained her and worked with her, then she's fine. A lot of people and a lot of organizations want to pretend like training a dog is some secret. It's some elite secret. It's like the EMS or paramedic professionals who think teaching civilians stop the bleed is wrong. I mean, what? What? It's technical. There's like a couple steps to it. It's not that difficult. It's principle based. It's, you know, you could learn about the science, you could learn about the technical application, and you could just do it and practice it. That's the same thing with working with a dog. You find the right trainer, you implement the right routine, and you sustain that, you're going to be just fine. I'm not saying go out there and make your dog a service dog. Don't do that. I have a 100% permanent disability. I could have a physical disability dog, just like anybody dealing with a physical disability can. I'm training my Utah Cane Corso. That's the organization that provided me that dog. I'm training that dog to be my next service dog. Why? Because as I get older, my physical disabilities get worse, and I'm going to need a bigger dog to brace my big ass as it grows wider. Look, get a dog, introduce it into protection work, security work, but work with a reliable trainer. Find that reliable trainer, stick with them, and then stay consistent. Being prepared in the office or at work. So I had this ideology from the very beginning with Phil Kraft that it would not work trying to teach preparedness if we didn't teach people how to integrate this thing called preparedness into their life, but also make it convenient, fun, and just something that they could do every day. You know that thing like you get into and you're like, man, this is cool, but it's a lot of work to get involved, and then you just don't do it. So you have all that equipment sitting around. You're like, I got into skiing, and you get the skis that you never touched, that you went skiing once, you know. You have to find a way to implement it or inject it into your life that's going to work for you. So one of the techniques I use is if you go to work, you need to carry a European man satchel, a computer case, a backpack, something that you're going to use every single day in your routine. Then you look at that one bag and you fill it with the staples of preparedness, which include survival, first aid, and then pack all the rest of it out with your environmental factors, the things that are going to affect you most. If you live in cold weather, you might want Mylar space blankets. You might want bivy sacks. You might want more fire starter kits. So make sure you try to integrate that into your normal routine. A lot of people have asked me, like, Mike, I can't carry a gun on my person in my workplace. Well, can you carry it in your car? Can you carry it inside of your computer bag next to you? Those considerations are going to at least give you a position that you need to maneuver to in order to protect yourself or defend yourself. Like, I believe in constitutional rights that you're born into, that you're literally born into as an American, that are inherent to us, that we don't have to, you don't necessarily have to earn or advocate for. It's just inherent. So when it comes to like carrying a firearm, I'm going to carry a firearm. I'm going to take that risk and carry that firearm. Why? Because I'm a law-abiding citizen. I do the right thing. I'm not overtly showing people my pistol. I'm not showing off. I have that pistol to protect myself, and I'm going to have that at all times. Plate carrier setup. There's different plate carrier setups. There's like a gabillion versions of plate carrier setups. I myself am a fan of Tier Tactical as my favorite plate carriers. I've used them all. To me, the highest quality is Tier and then Cry. Those two kit carriers are the best in the world. I've used both of them real world, and they're my favorite. Prime Body Armor, I've seen evaluated and tested with a buddy of mine named Sergio, and it is one of my favorite armor companies. And when they come out with that armor, we will sell that at Fieldcraft Survival. I'm super excited about that. We've devastated those plates. They're reasonable in price, and they're amazing at stopping bullets. Get a Prime Armor setup and then get a Tier Tactical or Cry setup. I like the JPC jumpable plate carrier from Cry, and I use the Pico, P-I-C-O, from Tier Tactical. I have that kit carrier like 20 feet from me. Have you ever considered doing a seminar series on entrepreneurship and starting a company? Yes, I actually have. So I've been asked that a lot. And here's what I'll say about that. There's a lot of guys doing that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who do that. And it's part of their business strategy. The only problem I have with only doing business is I feel like, just like I feel like to be a tactical instructor, you need to have a lot of experience, not just theory and concepts and philosophies, but you have to have experience, like years in the trenches in order to be able to teach tactics properly. I feel the same way about business. Now, I would consider myself a successful entrepreneur who's in the grind, which means I haven't sold a business and go, yeah, look at me. That's my proof of concept. I'm in it. So as a person who's in it, who's talking about best practices and marketing and media and all that stuff, I don't know if I'm the subject matter expert in it. It doesn't mean I won't do it. It just means I won't double down on that exclusively. Now, here's what I will do. I'm starting a mentor program called Mentor One, and M1 is a series. It goes through M1, M2, M3. And the idea is teaching you facets of leadership, of business, of community, so on and so forth, to make you the best version of yourself to be mentors for others. I've realized in civilian life, there's not a lot of mentor slash leadership programs. Yeah, there's this thing called life coaching. But how do you need to be positioned to be a life coach? I don't even know what that means. Like, is your life squared away? But to be a mentor and to teach people to be mentors, or a leader and teach people to be leaders, I think that's super important. And that's something you might see from me in the near future. I really like the single man and two man stuff. I do too. I'm a big fan of that. I see people teaching multi-dude CQB, like a lot of people. I guess that's a thing. But I prefer to use one, two man, like practical family home defense use. That's the train I'm on. I like that. Because when you're doing single man or single person close quarters battle in defense of your home, that's practical. How often are you going to meet up with your mates and do a raid? Not likely. So I don't really do that. I don't teach that. Pistol fundamentals, grip, stance, sight picture, trigger, pull, follow through. Not really a question. I will just say this. We teach four fundamentals of gunfighting. Pistol fundamentals are very, and this is what I think you mean, the fundamentals of marksmanship are very different than the fundamentals of gunfighting. The fundamentals of gunfighting for me and my company, Philcraft Survival, is grip, trigger, stance, and alignment. In no particular order, by the way. So when we talk about these things, we talk about not what you could do, like how advanced you could be, but what you can get away with primarily. Because we're talking about technical skill sets that if you look at the fundamentals of marksmanship, measure it from 7 to 9 different fundamentals, you're looking at fundamentals that degrade with stress. So in the fundamentals of gunfighting, we focus on the things that you can get away with, right? And then build up from there. So let's move on to the next question. Violent riots, moms with kids in house, how do I hide them while I bear firearms and defend? Good question. Very good question. So here's a consideration. Loaded firearms are dangerous in the house with kids. One, you should train your children how to appropriately come across and react and respond to live firearms. Yes, I know that's counterintuitive, but not counterproductive. You see, when somebody's curious about something, they're going to find it. I'll take myself as an example. When I was a kid, my dad had a pistol because he carried one on duty. I found his pistol every single time he hit it, and I used to play with that pistol while it was loaded as a little kid. That scares the crap out of me for somebody like you who's a parent. Because if you don't think your kids are getting into your crap, they are. So you have to prepare them by educating them on the dangers and also how these things work. And it might be a conversation like this. Son, this is a pistol. This pistol is very dangerous. Let me show you how this pistol works. And I'm going to show you how dangerous this can be if improperly used. Son, here's what you do if you come across a live pistol. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to contact an adult. If there's no adult around, I want you to make sure nobody goes around that pistol. And I want you to protect your sister from getting near that pistol as well. If your sister is adamant about touching that pistol, I want you to unload that pistol. Now, there is a timeline here. I don't know, because it depends on your circumstance. But if a kid's in school and he's learning through the education of a curriculum, then he's smart enough or at least has the aptitude or capacity to be able to process information step by step in order to start that process. So I'm not telling you to teach your 4-year-old how to load, unload, make safe a gun. I'm saying it's important that they know and understand. You personally, I would say get a box that's lockable. I like manual lockable boxes. I don't like electronics kind of stuff around kids because I don't trust electronics. So if you're trying to get biometrics from yourself in the middle of the night under stress, trying to save your life or that of your families, that seems scary to me. But if you have a combo, especially 3, 4, 5, 6 numbers that you have to manually punch, that is a lot of information to retain. You don't write down that number anywhere. You don't put it in your cell phone. You do a randomized number or version of that. You memorize it and you only disseminate it to people who are adults who need access to that box. That's what I would do. I would have one by my nightstand. I would have one where you have a primary entryway into your home, and that's how I lock it. Other than that, all the guns that you have in your house need to be locked and stored in a gun safe for their protection, to protect them from the elements, but also to consolidate that stuff. But all the other guns, if you have children in the house, should be locked away. Now, if as the kids get older, that is a more of a conversation and a consideration, which is, hey, we have a gun here for our protection, but also for yours. And as they grow up, once they gain the aptitude to handle those guns safely themselves, it could be used for them in their own self-defense. That's how I think about it. Hope that helps. Violent riots. That's important. Moms with kids. Man, look, last year or the year before, kind of a mix, a conglomerate of years, it all blends together. These so-called protests were turning into deadly riots, and they were bleeding out into normal neighborhoods. And I say normal, like neighborhoods on streets, houses on streets, where people were getting the houses broken into, where people who were around their homes were getting violently assaulted and attacked. When I think about violent riots, I want to displace from that, or I want to bed down in my home. The third pillar of preparedness for my company, Fieldcraft Survival, is homestead. Secure yourself, your family, and your home, and have a plan. And we have plenty of content on that, by the way. So I'm trying to design a survival knife. What do you want in a knife? Man. So a lot of people, I'm in the knife world, right? I mean, we do survival, so we have a whole bunch of relationships, Grizzly Forge, Montana Knife Company, all these great knife makers, Standwatch knives. So the thing about knives for us as a business is we can't do too much advertising. Oh, Viking Tactics new folder, which we'll have in. Excited about Kyle Lamb's new folder. But there's a whole bunch of cool knives, but we can't advertise or market them because we'll get our account shut down. So a lot of it, when it comes to even survival, they don't differentiate between the two. So with that being said, we do like to educate with knives. We want kids to learn how to use knives, how to sharpen them, especially for primal, austere, outdoor survival. But we want people to be safe. But I'm not partial to any. I've asked Kevin Estella this question, and there is an answer from him. But I don't know if I have an end-all, be-all knife that I would say is the solution. Couple things that I look for. One, I want a straight blade for the ability to cut on a board or whatever that might be, because I might be cutting through food. I might be preparing, you know, wood or tinder, shaving down wood. I want a serrated portion of that blade. I want a portion of that where I could saw away at material just as much as I can cut. And I want a good hard piece of steel. I'm not a steel expert. I'm not a knife expert. Sorry. But I also want a tanto type front end, because I want to be able to use a, like, I don't know, is beveled a front end of that to be able to use in self-defense as well. I want to be able to puncture with that knife, but I want to be able to slash with that knife. Also, I want a good grip. And I want a good grip where when I stab something, whether it's meat, material, whatever, that my hand doesn't slip through the knife and get cut. So I want to have something protecting me there. And trust me, again, like I said, I'm not a knife expert. That's why I don't know the nomenclature. Lumens debate. Why slightly lower is better, not 1,000 plus? Good question. Ooh, good question. So often not discussed is the lumens debate. So if you have a flashlight and you use that flashlight, the reason you probably have that particular flashlight is because it has the most lumens. Most often lumens are associated with being better. Got more, you got a better handheld light, gun light, whatever it may be. So here's the deal. When you're looking at special operations guys running lights on their carbines, for example, their rifles, they're picking up individual slivers of the pie in close quarters battle. So when they go into a corner, let's say I go into a doorway and I clear left, there's a buddy of mine who's simultaneously clearing right. So when we dip and dive into that room, when we illuminate those corners, we're not at a great risk to our lives because we have people that are picking up pieces of the pie in order to confront whatever it may be. So when I shine my light into a corner looking for something, and then something's 3 feet to the right of that, I have a number three guy who's stepping in and clearing that segment of the pie for me. So the problem I have is when you're clearing with a light, man, I'm going to do a light video. I think I'm going to do that tonight. When you're clearing with a light and you go to clear with a specific light, you are by yourself shining a strobe of light into a corner, for example. When you do that, the bad guy who's not potentially in that corner now knows where you're at. And not only that, but if you used 1,000 lumens into most often white-ish walls, that reflection of that light from your position is also blinding you. Now, depending on the lumens and the reflective surface, depends on how long you'll be blinded. But that is a huge consideration. Because if you go into a room and you go to clear into that room with a gun and a light, and it's 1,000 lumens, and you hit one spot, as you go to clear the rest of the room, you're only able to track what that flood light in that one area is seeing. And so you're slow. You need to get snapshots of rooms. You need to clear rooms before you enter them using relative cover, the threshold, an obstacle, cover and concealment. But if you have a lower set or a lower lumens light, you could still clear, but not burn out your night vision. The idea is if you have 1,000 lumens and you hit somebody in the face, you could blind them temporarily. Do I want to do that? So if you have a guy with a gun and you blind him, then what is he going to do as he's blinded? Well, if you get hit in the face, I think the last time I checked, it was like around five to seven seconds, I believe. If you're getting hit in the face with 1,000 lumens, you're looking at 5 to 7 seconds of blind rage where this person's just shooting and going crazy while you're doing what? Because you just, if you deactivate that light, you're also blind. We have to remember those considerations. And I'm not always a fan of more lumens means better. How do you recommend exposing firearms to children? Very good question. Here's how you do it. One, it's on a case-by-case basis. What I realized in being around a lot of kids, teaching kids, kids are not created equal in their aptitude and their capacity to process information because it depends on their age, genetics, their environment that they're being brought up in. And so there is not one end-all be-all solution. So the short answer is baby steps, one step at a time. So the exposure to children needs to be fun, but needs to be safe. You ever break out an airsoft gun or you're trying to, like I've had this experience where I try to do training and I break out an airsoft gun, might even be a simulations gun, and people get weird. They know it's not going to kill them, so they pretend like it's a toy. So when you have a gun like a Remington, or let's say it's a Ruger 22, a 10-22. Well, that's our 22 rifle. They're still dangerous. They can kill you. Absolutely could kill you. But you get a pink one. It's all cute. And all of a sudden, it's a toy. So what I like to do is introduce children to pellet air rifles, which are also, by the way, could be deadly. I mean, my cousin shot me in the face as a young child, a point blank range with a .177 caliber pistol pellet that had a sharp end that lodged in my face for years. Had an accidental discharge and shot me in the face while sitting on the ground and he was sitting on the side of the bed. So when you look at firearms, you want to scale it, but you want to make sure they're safe no matter what it is. So maybe you start off with airsoft. Then you migrate into pellet guns or air rifles, and then you migrate into real guns starting off with small caliber. Hunting and sport shooting is one of the best ways to introduce them to that. I mean, you don't want to be teaching your kid with a Ruger 10-22 how to defend his life and, you know, anatomical holds on human beings. Like, that's not appropriate, especially at that age. Make it fun for them. Give them the education. Take it seriously. And I think that's the best way to do it. Nothing, just wanted to say thank you for all you do. No, thank you. Urban preparedness for those who can't escape the cities. So a couple of things. One, urban preparedness is super important. We don't do enough of it, and we will. So one of the challenges that I want to do is living 72 hours in an urban environment in the middle of a city on my own. I want to self-film it, or I want somebody else to film it, but I want to do that to show you how difficult, but also how resourceful you could be in an urban environment. The difficulty with urban environments, especially urban sprawls, which have floors or buildings stacked on each other, these skyscrapers, where you have apartment complexes that are 10 stories with apartment or condos next door that are 100 stories, and then corporate buildings that are 200 stories. You start to get complex when you learn all of the historical references for catastrophe and how things have turned really bad in a very short period of time. The San Francisco, for example, earthquake of the early 1900s is a great example. Things started falling apart rapidly because the sheer population. When you have that many people stacked on top of each other, things can get problematic because you have the same amount of resources that exist in the rural environment, but you know, 100,000x the number of people fighting over those same resources. So more to follow on that because I want to cover that in depth, but it's something that we will focus our attention on. I'm going to take a couple more because this is a shorter podcast, but I have a ton of questions. I want to make sure that we get to all of them. So I'm going to do a part two of this as well. Homesteading, looking to buy land in West Virginia, any lessons learned or tips? So look, homesteading is super cool. I thought about this today on my drive from Washington State because I was looking at some land with Kevin in Washington and I was thinking about this. Here's what you have to understand about homesteading. The likelihood of you getting off grid completely and having resources that are only self-reliant. You're not depending on stores. You're not depending on Amazon. You're not depending on any other external things except for you is very, very difficult to do. Why? Because of the sheer dependency that we have now on everything else. And I know some people are like, well, I could do that. Well, let me give you the example. Hunting. Look, if you go on the East Coast, in some parts of the East Coast, you could hunt all day long. You could get pheasant, you can get dove, and you could get all these great game animals and fill your freezer overnight. But in some places, like, for example, Arizona that I lived, good luck getting a hunting tag. Good luck getting any meat in any of your fridges or your freezers. It's very difficult to do. So I want you to start focusing on how much percentage of your life that you can make more self-reliant in every facet. Can you convert some of your power to solar? Can you put a contingency backup power source in a Generac 17 kilowatt generator that runs off propane? Can you get a propane tank as a reserve? Can you get chickens to lay eggs? Well, if you got chickens to lay eggs, you need to get the food. Where are you getting the food from? Huh. Well, if you go to Tractor Supply and you spend just as much on a carton of eggs to feed your chickens to lay the eggs, isn't that kind of defeating the purpose? Oh, can you grow your own food? And then that costs really nothing besides the seeds. And then you grow that food and to feed the chickens? Yeah, you could do that. But is that enough? How many people you got? You got four people in your family? Was that three eggs a piece per day? So when you do these things, be realistic about it. Have yourself set up to where you could start chomping at the bit one step at a time and then build up from there. Scaling is important. I think the most important element to homesteading is having the right kind of land. You don't need 100 acres. In fact, if you got 100 acres, it's kind of a waste. You need like an acre. There's a lot of books out there that will tell you that if you have an acre, you could do a lot on an acre, especially with a single family. So you got you, the wife, the kid, a couple kids. That's perfect. So start there. You don't have the soil in your own environment because you live in a state that doesn't have great soil like Arizona. Well, that's what planters are for, right? There's different tactics for different states. There's plenty of resources for that. But I would say is take it one step at a time and have fun experiencing the journey. I'm committed to this. I'll do more content on it. I'm all about that life. Guys, I'm going to leave this at a 30-minute because what I'm going to do for you guys, since I just dropped this, is I'm going to drop another one on Friday, somewhere on there, Thursday, Friday, so you guys can get another round of this for your next 30-minute commute where I answer the rest of the questions starting where I left off. Guys, I hope you enjoyed the podcast, the Mike Force Podcast. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast and all the listening that you do. If you don't subscribe, make sure you subscribe. If you haven't passed it on, make sure you pass it on and tell somebody about it. And if you haven't left me feedback on iTunes, do that. Every little bit helps in driving analytics and getting more listeners more exposed to all things preparedness. Thank you so much. Till next time.